Nice to have you here. Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rohn. We start our second of 3 hours. A very good Wednesday to you. The program is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. In the second hour, a conversation with Colorado head football coach Mel Tucker. That's coming up in about 35 minutes. Looking ahead to hour number three, I have a legal analyst with Sports Illustrated, Michael McCann. We'll talk about Antonio Brown, where that leaves him. And again, this is not just an Antonio Brown problem. It's a Patriots problem, too. And we will hit on that. As you all know, today is September 11th. And it was 18 years ago today that the United States was attacked. Even though it's been nearly two decades, you can probably remember exactly what you were doing and exactly how you felt at that time. My thoughts are with those who lost family members and friends, and those whose lives were forever changed. All these years later, I still cannot begin to imagine how you feel today and every day since. My gratitude is with those who enlisted, those who re-enlisted, and those who stayed on, some of whom made the ultimate sacrifice. And I know a number of you have also shared your thoughts. I want to read an email right here. Dear Jim, I hope you're well, my man. As we hit another anniversary of 9/11 this year, it takes me back to that dark day 18 years ago. I remember you coming on the air that week, and that was really the only thing normal about that week and the weeks that followed. Everything had permanently changed in the world, but the one thing that stayed the same in some capacity was sports and hearing your voice at 9 a.m. every day. Thanks for doing what you do. I would love for you to retell that powerful story involving former Georgetown legend John Thompson and your former producer as it relates to 9/11. The story still gives me goosebumps thinking about it and really shows how some decisions that fateful day were the difference between life and death. Keep up the good work, and here's to another 18 years. Never forget. Signed, Ryan. You know, I've played the sound of this exchange before, and I asked myself if I should do it again, but I do know for a fact we continue to add new listeners to the program. And even there's some existing listeners that have never heard this story. And the story does relate to Georgetown legend John Thompson and a producer by the name of Danny Swartz, who I used to work with back in the day. And both of them came on the show one year, and we talked about what happened in the events leading up to that day.
Let me try to go back, because I've been telling this thing for 10 years. Right at the time of 9/11, Jim, some of my people were talking with a representative of your staff who wanted me to come on the show. The young man who my representative was talking to was trying to get me to travel on the 12th to L.A., Well, I said, no, I didn't want to travel. And I told my representative, I said, no, I'm not going to go. I will only go if I can go on the 11th because I want to be in Vegas on the 12th. Story. The young man called back to the office a few days before all of this happened and said, listen, he wasn't able to get the studio or whatever he was trying to accomplish with me, Jim, and wanted to know whether I would come on the 12th. Well, back in those days, I didn't compromise hardly anything, you know. And what happened is that I told my people, I said, well, let me talk to this boy because I'm not going to go. You know, I said, if I can't go on the 11th, I'm not going to go. By then, we had made the reservations and everything. Okay, so I talked to the young man. The guy was very pleasant, and he and I went back and forth in talking. And it wasn't hostile. But anyway, what he finally said to me is he said, Coach, he said, if you promise me that you'll come on the 12th, I will get you back to Vegas immediately after we do the taping, he said, and I will make certain that you get there in time for whatever you're trying to get done. And I'm sitting there, I'm saying to myself, oh, hell, I don't want to do this. And the guy was nice. I mean, he was persuasive. He wasn't hostile with me. So I said, okay, son, I'll do it. I said, I'll come on the 12th. Now, if he had not have tried to been persistent with me, I would have insisted that I stay and get on that plane on the 11th. Well, a little while after we all were reacting to the Pentagon getting hit, and she said, John, she said, look at your itinerary. I said, yeah, no, I'm supposed to go on the 12th. She said, no, look at your itinerary. You were supposed to go on that plane. She said, that plane was the plane you were booked on. If that kid hadn't have talked you out of it, you would have been on that plane. So, you know, and making a shortcut around the whole story, I've been a Jim Rohn fan. Anybody talk about Jim Rohn, I'm whipping their ass. I'm going to tell you that right now. But that's, in essence, what did happen.
John, let's face it. I mean, you're no shrinking violent. You're a pretty intimidating guy. And for Danny to stand in there, that was kind of a hard line to walk.
Without this kid doing his job in a professional manner, I would have been in trouble. I mean, it would have been over. I mean, it really would have been over. But the way you did your job, particularly dealing with a person like me, I did what I did because I thought it was the best way for me to do it at that time. But I certainly do appreciate it. And I'm going to tell you, boy, if you ever come to Washington, you look me up. I'm going to make time for you.
I will do that. And it was a pleasure to speak to you back then, Coach. And it's a pleasure to speak to you today. And I'm glad it all worked out.
Thanks so much. And it just shows you when a person does his job in a professional way, that it does reap some benefits. If not for you, it damn sure did for me that time. And if you could have pissed me off, man, I'd have gotten mad. I mean, it would have been curtains for me. But you handled it in a way that I said, I cannot not do this the way you did it. So thanks very much. I appreciate that, Danny.
Thank you, Coach.
So I listen to that generally once a year. And people always ask for it. And I get chills every single time I hear that. Now, again, I want to say my thoughts are with those who lost family members, those who lost friends, those whose lives were forever changed. I want to state once again, all these years later, I cannot begin to imagine what that must feel like today, what that must feel like every day. But that story is really something. That conversation, that exchange that I just played was on the 10-year anniversary. That was on the 10-year anniversary, and the two of them, Danny Swartz, who used to work with me at Fox, and John Thompson, they had never spoken to each other since then. And to hear John Thompson tell that story really is something. And that whole point that, and Danny's smart, and Danny was very good at his job, but John Thompson saying, I really am thankful that he handled it the way he did and was as persuasive as he was in such a professional manner. He said, because back in the day, John Thompson said it, I did not compromise very much back in the day. And if he had pushed me hard or pushed me the wrong way, I would have said, I'm not doing this. And then it would have ended very badly. But that is a wild story. So 18 years ago today, everything changed. And a number of you do reset that every year at this time. And I know a number of you have never heard that before. 1-800-636-8686. And we're talking about Antonio Brown as well. This email says, in the age of Me Too, many people are more likely to believe women who make accusations of sexual assault. And that's a good thing. Do I think that AB is the sort of bad guy and egomaniac who might have done something like this? I do. On the other hand, do I know for sure that he did do this? I do not. A rush to judgment on either side is a mistake. This also raises the problem that faces both the justice system and the NFL. The usual lack of witnesses to the alleged attack make it he said, she said, and it can be difficult to be absolutely sure who is telling the truth. Sometimes a person's fame, reputation, or previous known behavior works in their favor, as perhaps it did for our newest Supreme Court justice. Sometimes previous behavior may work against the accused, as it may for Antonio Brown. We should try to keep an open mind, and we may never know the whole truth. Larry in Albany. Well, there may or may not be witnesses. According to one report, there was another player who may have been in the house at that time. If that's the case, you can be sure that other player will be a part of the proceedings. I don't know. I don't know enough to know. The only thing that I talked about was the suit and the denial from Antonio Brown's people. And I'm not going to have any kind of other determination. I have no other determination because I don't have enough information. So I'm not going to rush in. I'm only going to say that these are the facts as reported. And don't tell me the Patriots were surprised. I don't know what they knew. I don't know what they didn't know. I don't know if they did know. I don't know if they knew. And they asked Antonio Brown before they signed him, and they accepted what he said. I don't know if they knew, and they didn't care. I don't know if maybe they didn't know. Just don't tell me you're surprised. And that's not to say that because a guy lobs furniture off a 14th floor, that that equates to sexual assault, therefore you should not be surprised. I'm talking about this guy's resume. I'm talking about this guy's track record. I'm talking about what this guy's done. The things that we know that he's done the last couple of years. What about all the other things that we don't know about? So whatever you do, if you're the Patriots, don't tell me that you're surprised. How can you be surprised? And it's not only an Antonio Brown problem, it's a Patriots problem as well. All right, still ahead. Your thoughts on this. Again, I'm not here for your jokes, but if you want to elevate this conversation, take part in the conversation, and you can contribute responsibly, then let's go ahead and do that. Still ahead, my thoughts on Kevin Durant. Back in the news, he had a really interesting piece in the Wall Street Journal, which I want to react to. Mel Tucker is the head football coach of Colorado. We have him at 10:40 Pacific. And the Jim Rome podcast coming up later on today. Former Texas Ranger great Michael Young joins me. He had his number retired. Only five Rangers have ever had their number retired. He's one of them. And I'll look forward to that later on. Hiring can be a challenge. Codable co-founder, Gretchen Huebner. She discovered that. Gretchen needed to hire a game artist for her education tech company and knew it would not be easy to find somebody for her team. That's why she went to ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter does not depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its technology identifies people with the right experience and then invites them to apply to your job. Gretchen posted her job on ZipRecruiter and was impressed with how quickly she found qualified applicants. She also used ZipRecruiter screening questions so she could focus on the very best candidates. That's how Gretchen found a new game artist in less than 2 weeks. With results like that, it is no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the very first day. See why ZipRecruiter is an effective way for businesses of all sizes to find the candidates they're looking for. Try ZipRecruiter for free at our web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Rome. 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 ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Kevin Durant. I'll do so in a minute. Quick reminder, next time you want a protein snack, ditch the drinks and the bars. Grab a bag of Old Trapper beef jerky. Tender, tasty, real beef that rocks your craving for a snack that satisfies. Ask for it by name because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? It's exactly what I did post-show yesterday. Exactly what I did. And it did what I said it does. Satisfied me. That was great. I did it yesterday post-show. I'll be running that back again today. All right, so Kevin Durant did a piece with the Wall Street Journal. Really interesting read. It generally is with KD. Chock full of interesting quotes. And the reason for that, KD is an interesting guy. And he's doing some interesting thinking. I'm just not sure that he's fully resolved some of the thoughts that he's having. Let me give you a few examples. Quote, some days I hate the circus of the NBA. Some days I hate that the players let the NBA business, the fame that comes with the business, alter their minds about the game. Sometimes I don't like being around the executives and politics that come with it. I hate that. End quote. Now, I know a lot of people are going to hear that and think, that guy hates the NBA. What the hell is wrong with that guy? He's one of the greatest NBA players ever. He's got the greatest job ever, and he hates it? What's his deal? I think a lot of you probably think that. I kind of see where he's going, though. It is a long season. He's right. It is a circus. And it is a complete grind. And let me just stop you right there before you say it. I'm not saying you don't grind. I'm saying don't say that they don't grind. Look, I'm guessing that just about every person who plays or works in the association does hate it at some point. It's not you or me going into our backyard to get a few shots up. It's not you or I dropping into a local gym for some run. It's a job. But Durant had more. He had a lot more. And he had a few things he wanted to say about his time in Golden State. Durant said, quote, "I came in there wanting to be part of a group, wanting to be part of a family, and definitely felt accepted. But I'll never be one of those guys. I didn't get drafted there. Steph Curry, obviously drafted there. Andre Iguodala won the first finals, first championship. Klay Thompson, drafted there. Draymond Green, drafted there. And the rest of the guys kind of rehabilitated their careers there. So me? Bleep. How are you going to rehabilitate me? What are you going to teach me? How can you alter anything in my basketball life? I got an MVP already. I got scoring titles." End quote. All right, now we're getting into it a little bit, right? I mean, on some level, I do see him working. Steph, Draymond, Klay, they were drafted there. But Iguodala wasn't. Andrew Bogut wasn't. David West wasn't. I could keep going. But there were plenty of parts of that roster who were not drafted there. Now, KD would say, yeah, but those guys, quote, rehabilitated their careers there, end quote. Wait a minute, Kev. Wasn't that why you went to Golden State? To win titles. To make sure that you'd get the feeling of winning a ring. To stack wins. Isn't that essentially rehabilitating your career? How is that not rehabilitating your career and your image? And don't take offense to what I'm saying. Because there was that famous SI cover back in the day where you talked about being sick and tired of finishing second. That's why you went to Golden State, remember? So you wouldn't finish second. To rehabilitate your image as a guy who finished second. And that's not bashing you at all. That's just stating the facts. I mean, I was one of the few guys who was on record as having absolutely no problem with you going to Golden State. I had your back. In fact, I even celebrated it. I thought it was great. But don't rewrite history and don't act like it wasn't about creating the narrative of your career. Quote, "As time went on, I started to realize I'm just different from the rest of the guys. It's not a bad thing. Just my circumstances and how I came up in the league. And on top of that, the media always looked at it like KD and the Warriors. So it's like nobody could get a full acceptance of me there." End quote. Man, now it's getting thick. There's a lot to unpack here. I'm not sure I've got all the time to unpack what needs to be unpacked here. Like, if Durant's point is that he was never going to get the kind of love that Steph gets from Golden State fans, he's right about that. Because that's a relationship that goes way back. A relationship that goes back a long time. A fan base that has seen Steph grow and struggle and turn into a transcendent force. So you're right. You're never going to be like him. But this notion that, quote, the media always looked at it like KD and the Warriors, it's kind of weird. Because if you wanted people to not talk about your free agency all of last year, you could have handled it very differently. But you kind of welcome that talk about free agency, which is essentially going to create a division between you and the Warriors. I mean, of course. The media didn't do that to you. You did that to you and the organization. And there's more. He had thoughts about Steve Kerr's offense. Quote, "The motion offense we run in Golden State, it only works to a certain point. We can totally rely on our system for maybe the first two rounds.
Then the next two rounds, we're going to have to mix in individual play. We've got to throw teams off because they're smarter in that round of the playoffs. So now I have to dive into my bag deep to create stuff on my own, off the dribble, ISOs, pick and rolls, more so than let the offense create points for me, end quote. Look, Steve Kerr, I'm sure, would be the very first person to admit he's not a perfect coach. But that offensive style that you're criticizing, that you say does not work so well late in the rounds of the postseason, it seemed to work pretty well before you got there. It seemed to work well enough to hang banners. It seemed to work well enough to win a championship without you and come as close as you possibly can to winning a second title before you arrived and to be competitive in the finals without you this year. And sure, sometimes those ISOs didn't work so well. Sometimes that ground the offense to a halt. So for him to criticize that offensive system, I think is pretty curious. But the most interesting stuff from the interview is not where he's complaining about the Warriors' offense or about team chemistry. It's later in the piece. It's where you can really see him wrestling with big topics. And I'm not sure he's winning that wrestling match in the way that he thinks he is. One of the other things that Durant talks about is that he realizes, quote, how big this whole bleep is, end quote. And the bleep, as described in the Wall Street Journal, is, quote, the machine, a great big invisible generator of narratives programmed by the powers that be to gin up controversy, conflict, whatever keeps people dialed in. He's learned, he's learning to free himself from the machine to separate the game he loves from the noise and nonsense surrounding it, end quote. So that sounds like a guy who wants to separate himself from the hype and the narratives and get back to the game he loves, right? That all sounds great. That all sounds great until you take a step back. Like, he's ticked off at the machine, the thing that generates narratives and creates controversy, and is looking to free himself from that machine. I get that. One problem, KD, you're doing all of this in a long-form piece in the Wall Street Journal, a newspaper with a circulation of 2.6 million in a piece that's going to be picked up by millions more. Like, you're expressing your dislike of narratives and controversies while creating a narrative and a controversy. You're expressing your dislike of the machine while talking to the machine. Your dislike of the machine while participating in the machine. Some serious pretzel twisting going on here, and he's not done making pretzels. Like, if you didn't know anything about Kevin Durant, you know that he likes social media. He really likes it. And it's burned him numerous times when he's been caught with burner accounts that either hype him or defend him. As the Journal writes, quote, Instagram is one of the main portals to the world. It's an introvert utopia, he says, a place to engage with people from a safe distance. Never mind the grief it's caused him in the past. In recent years at times, using fake accounts, he's clashed with online critics, including at least one who still had a curfew. He checks his direct messages twice daily. And though they number in the hundreds, he methodically works his way through chatting with all sorts of folks about all sorts of subjects, end quote. So again, this is a guy who's saying he hates narratives, he hates controversies, yet he's hopping on Instagram throughout the day. The very definition of feeding the machine. You hate the circus, but you're attending the circus multiple times every day. And the best part of the whole Wall Street Journal piece did not even come in the Wall Street Journal piece. It came on Twitter when some rando on Twitter with 379 followers tweeted, quote, dude, you have to be the most self-conscious dude in the NBA. Give it a rest and grow up. And Kevin Durant responded, quote, no. That is so amazing. So unbelievable. Honestly, if this was all performance art, it would be the greatest show ever. But it's not. So what I'm saying is this. I'm not saying you can't or you shouldn't be on Twitter, or that you can't or shouldn't do interviews with major publications that play significant roles in shaping narratives, aka the machine.
But you can't both be a part of the machine and complain about the machine. You can't be going on social media, sometimes with your own account and sometimes with burner accounts, then complain about the machine and the narratives. You're creating some of those narratives. So I like that this guy's thinking big thoughts and wrestling with big ideas, but it feels like you got tied up and twisted in them. And it feels like those wrestling matches are not going so well still yet. KD, still doing KD things. It's a really interesting read. All right, when we come back, your thoughts on that? Your thoughts on his time at Golden State, according to him. And that he was never fully accepted. Mel Tucker is the head football coach of Colorado. He joins me next. But first, here is a bottom-of-the-hour sports update.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome back. We go back-to-back now in the middle of hour number two. And to start hour number three, I've got Michael McCann coming up at the top of next hour. And we will talk about the legal ramifications involving Antonio Brown. Also, unbelievable come-from-behind victory for Colorado over Nebraska. I know that was absolutely soul-crushing to Nebraska fans. Colorado, though, coming back, they trailed 17-0 in the first half, and they come all the way back to beat Nebraska in OT. Their head coach, Mel Tucker, is going to be joining us momentarily. Or in the very least, we are efforting him right now. Got the Jim Rome podcast coming up after the program. We'll push that out later on today. Former MLB great Michael Young joins me then. 1-800-636-8686 in the National League. The Dodgers wrap up the NL West again. Milwaukee dealt a really bad blow. MVP candidate Christian Yelich fouled a ball off his kneecap. And we'll talk some baseball. Get into that. But as promised, we're joined right now by the head football coach at the University of Colorado. He's in his first season with the Buffaloes. He was named head coach back in December. Colorado beat number 25 Nebraska 34-31 in OT on Saturday. Unbelievable come-from-behind win for them. Colorado is out quickly. They're 2-0. They're at home against Air Force on Saturday. Their head coach is Mel Tucker. He joins us right now. Mel, nice to have you on. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing good, Romy. How are you?
Good, good. Good to talk to you. So you start the year off 2-0. You got that win over Colorado State. You got that huge comeback win, Mel, over Nebraska. I know you're not going to rest on your laurels, but what's the vibe like around your football team right now?
Yeah, there's no time to rest with a team like Air Force coming in. You know, with the triple option, that presents a lot of challenges. But we've got a very positive vibe here in Boulder. Everyone's energized. Everyone likes the way the direction the program is going. Our players are all bought in. Our coaches are doing a great job. And we're just working really, really hard every day to get better.
All right, so I know you're looking ahead, Mel, but when you look back on that game, Nebraska jumps out to a 17-0 lead. It would have been easy for anybody to be down at halftime, but it does not seem like that was the case. What was your message to your players when they got back to the locker room?
The message was that I thought Nebraska had given us their best shot in the first half, and we hadn't really begun to play. We weren't doing well on offense. We weren't stopping them like we needed to do on defense. Special teams weren't violent enough. But I felt like if we could just settle down and just play one play at a time, don't look at the scoreboard, there was no doubt we could get back into it, and that's what we did.
Colorado head football coach Mel Tucker is my guest. Then you start chipping away. You do get back into it. You start chipping away in the third and in the fourth quarter. You hit on that 96-yard flea flicker that was the longest TD in school history. And I got to ask, what kind of emotions were going through you as that play unfolded?
I tell you what, our wide receiver coach, Darren Severini, was hugging me as the ball was in the air, you know.
That's great.
But obviously it was a great play call by Jay Johnson, our OC, and a great execution by our players. And it was a play that we practiced. It was there, and it's all about execution in the crunch time.
I love that part of the story, that he was hugging on you while the ball was still in the air. Mel Tucker is my guest. So Nebraska scores again. They make it 24-14. Then you come back and you tie it up at 24. They took the lead again, and then you go on a 10-play drive to tie the game with less than a minute to go. Then you get that interception to end a Nebraska drive before the end of regulation. So what was the mood like on the sideline going into OT?
Well, we know that we pride ourselves on our conditioning. Our team is built in a weight room. Our goal is to wear people down and make them quit in the end. We felt good going into overtime. We're at altitude. We're best conditioned. Our guys feel like they can run all day. I knew that we had a good shot when our captains went out to the coin toss and they were holding hands as they walked out. And I felt real good about that.
Colorado head football coach Mel Tucker is joining us. So Nebraska gets the ball to start OT. Your defense comes up with a huge sack on third down. That results in a missed field goal. You get the ball. You kick the game-winning field goal. Everybody's on the field. What was that moment like for you and for your team?
Yeah, it was a very exciting time. I mean, our fans were great, man. Our students were unbelievable. They rushed the field. I mean, it was complete mayhem. The players were excited, and I saw a lot of people in red filing out. You know, so it was a heck of a deal. It was a great time in Boulder.
You know, Mel, when you talk about how your football team was built in the weight room, it's that for sure. But it's even more. Like Katie Nixon, who caught that 96-yard TD, said after the game, "quote We didn't win today. We won back in summer workout. We won back when Coach Tucker came in last December," end quote. So what's that mean to you to hear that from a player, and what's it say about the attitude of the program?
It tells me that our players are all bought in and they understand why we do what we do. You know, we put them through a 9-week winter conditioning program before we even started spring ball. Spring ball was physical. It was tough. And then we had a great summer, and our fall camp was relentless. And our guys just believe in what we're doing. They know that everything we do is for a reason. We have to be best conditioned. Our team is built in the weight room. We have to be unselfish. We have to be disciplined, attention to detail, sense of urgency. And when you do things like that, you have a chance to be successful.
All right, so one of the words I pick, in fact, the word I pick out of that answer is relentless. I've heard you talk about that quite a bit. There's a lot of talk about being relentless around the program. Why is that so important? And when you use relentless, in what regard do you use that word? What's that mean to you?
Relentless means high velocity, and it means nonstop. We just have to go all day. And it's not just on the field, it's off the field. We have to be relentless in everything we do. You know, how we study, go to class, get our tutoring, our rest, our recovery. You know, how we study film. You know, how we practice, how we play the next play. We just got to keep going. There's no finish line. It just never stops.
That is relentless. Colorado Buffaloes head coach Mel Tucker joining us. You know, your coaching resume is pretty remarkable, and your name had come up for head coaching jobs. You had said that you had a list of boxes that you wanted to check before you took a job, and that Colorado checked all of the boxes. What were the items on your list, and what let you know that this was the right opportunity?
I believe first and foremost, you have to have two things. You have to have tradition and facilities. And Colorado, as you know, has a rich and proud football tradition here of winning, has won a national championship. A lot of great players, you know, Hall of Famers, College Hall of Fame guys, award winners. And then Rick George, our athletic director, has done a fantastic job. We have facilities here that are second to none, you know, top to bottom. So it's a first-class program. Facilities show a commitment to excellence, a commitment to winning. And then Rick George, the AD, he's a football guy. He played football at Illinois. He was here as the recruiting coordinator when Coach McCartney won the national championship, so he knows what it's all about. He knows what my challenges are. We're building this thing to win.
We're talking to Colorado head football coach Mel Tucker. They're 2-0. It's his first year. Now, of course, you played your college ball at Wisconsin. You were part of Barry Alvarez's first recruiting class. What do you remember about being recruited by Barry?
Yeah, Coach Alvarez is the man. I used to think he was in the mob, you know. He was the coolest guy. He was a hard-nosed guy. He had a winning pedigree. He had just come from Notre Dame. He had just won a national championship. You know, and I remember him getting T-shirts for us after our first year. We were 1-10 my freshman year. We had T-shirts he gave us that says, "We will win." And he told us to wear those things on campus. And we believed. And, you know, he was an excellent recruiter. And we brought in great players year after year after year. And 4 years later, we're in the Rose Bowl. So I owe a lot to Coach Alvarez.
Dude, that is such a great answer. I thought that he was in the mob. You know, Emil, we sent our oldest son to Wisconsin a couple of weeks back. He's going to attend school there, so I've been spending some time on campus. I saw Barry Alvarez last year when they played Rutgers. Man, he's still cool. He's still cool. He still has that it. Man, Ron Dane showed up, and I spent a little bit of time, and not that much time because you don't get that much time with the coach, but he's still cool like that, isn't he?
Yeah, Coach Al is the guy, man. Like, when I grow up, man, I want to be like Coach Al, man. He's got it all figured out, and he's a great coach, man. He's built a great program there, and he's a guy that I know that I can still count on to this day.
Hey, Mel, one more thing about that program before I let you go. You were part of a special group at Wisconsin. It included guys like Troy Vincent, who was an unbelievable player, Colts GM Chris Ballard, future NFL offensive coordinator Darrell Bevell. I mean, what do you remember about that time? Do you remember looking around and thinking, these guys aren't just good players, but they're going to have great futures in football going ahead? What was your mindset?
Yeah, I mean, we had a great group of guys there, and you know, it was about football. It was about going to school. You know, it was about, you know, making something of ourselves. And I mean, you mentioned Troy and Bev and Chris Ballard. You know, Todd Orlando, defensive coordinator at Texas. You know, Joe Rudolph, offensive coordinator at Wisconsin. I mean, Duer Sharp. You know, it just goes on and on and on. These guys that stayed in football and have had success in the game. And I think that's a tribute to our coaching staff that we had there in our environment. You know, they treated us well. They showed us the way, and they were role models for us. And obviously, we felt good about what they were doing, so we're doing the same thing.
You know, when you talk about having a tradition, Wisconsin has got a great tradition. You know, you were a grad assistant under Nick Saban at Michigan State, and then you worked with him at LSU, and then you went to the NFL, and you joined him again at Alabama. It's absolutely amazing. What was that experience like?
Yeah, I've known Coach Saban since I was 17 years old when he became the head coach at Toledo. He recruited me there, and so he's always been a mentor of mine. And, you know, I knew Nick, Coach Saban, before he won his first national championship, you know, when he was building his resume and when he was establishing himself and what type of programs he was going to run. And so I was right there, you know, almost on the ground floor, and I've seen him develop as a coach. I've seen him develop his program, and I've seen him build it, you know, three different places. And so that was a tremendous benefit for me, and really he gave me my first job in coaching in 1997. So certainly I owe my coaching career to Coach Saban.
So how has he changed? How has he evolved over the years?
Well, I'll tell you what, he's got relatively the same program. He's just perfected it. You know, he's like clockwork. I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen that movie Casino. I mean, he's just like clockwork. I mean, day after day after day after day, you cannot outwork Nick Saban. I mean, he's a guy that's two, three, four steps ahead of everyone. And over the years, he's just become more relentless. He's got it down to a science, and he never stops working.
The process. I have seen Casino. That's a great movie. All right, so finally, Mel, and this has been a great conversation, but the really important stuff, you've said that you're a Twizzlers guy. For those who do not understand Twizzlers, lay it out for me. What makes Twizzlers special?
What makes Twizzlers special? I tell you what, every now and then, man, you gotta treat yourself, you know. And I enjoy a little Twizzler every now and then. It's not a bad deal.
It's not a bad deal at all. In fact, it's a good deal. Colorado is 2-0 in the season. They had that amazing come-from-behind win over Nebraska in overtime on Saturday. Next up, they've got Air Force on Saturday. Another challenge. That's coming up at 1 p.m. Mel, that was great. You crushed your jungle debut. Really good to have you on the show. Congrats. I know you've got a lot of work ahead of you still. You'd say that, but great to have you, and thanks so much.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I appreciate you.
You too, Mel. Appreciate you very much. That was awesome. Always love an amazing jungle debut. A Nebraska fan, I know that had to hurt. That had to hurt, but you got to respect that. You have to respect the way Colorado played. You have to respect the way they kept grinding, the way they kept pounding, the way they executed, and you got to respect a coach. I know you love your coach. Scott Frost is a huge jungle guy, and it's a big Scott Frost house, but you got to respect Mel Tucker showing up the way he did and what he's building there and how quickly he's building it and his background. That will not be the last time he's on this show, if I have anything to say about it. Setting up hour number three, quickly, this email reads, Rome, I truly feel sorry for Christian Yelich and the fact that he's out for the rest of the season. Getting thumped on the knee is no joke. Sometimes you just have to look up into the sky and scream, why? Why? Sign Nancy? Omaha, man, you're better than that.
Omaha!
Aaron in Omaha. Omaha, you are so much better than that. At least I thought you were. War Christian, colossing his bat, Tanya, from this day forward.
Why?
First of all, Tanya did not hit Nancy with a bat. Second of all, it wasn't really a bat, it was a baton. a steel baton. So that gloss wouldn't work, Aaron. Wore a bounce-back game for my Huskers this weekend under the lights. When we come back, Michael McCann joins us, and we will talk Antonio Brown with him, the legal ramifications, and where that leaves the Patriots. Stay tuned.